Hey everyone, it's Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while since I recorded a podcast and I miss you guys. And I wanted to start off our podcast with one of our favorite shows, the Venture Capital series. On this episode, I brought Santiago back on, who was one of our famous guests from our last episodes in the series. And I brought on CMS Holdings to talk about the VC world and frankly, the world in general in a post-FTX collapse. We talked macro and markets. We talked fallout from FTX. We talked about what we want to see in the world moving forward, the core tenets of crypto, and much more. It was an awesome conversation that we originally had on Twitter Spaces, and we may continue to do so moving forward, but I wanted to cross-share it on our feed for anybody who couldn't make the episode. I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. What are you guys tracking on sleep this week? What's the average?
It's like been pretty sporadic. Probably like, maybe like 3 or 4 hour windows, like maybe. Like that I like go, it depends like on the day. I like also just have like, I had like a sick dog all weekend. I just had like multiple things like all like impacting this. So I'm probably averaging 3 to 4, but I guess it's not like, people keep saying this, like nothing else can happen, but it does seem like there's a little bit of that.
Yeah. Santiago, how you doing with everything going on?
Doing okay, I guess. I am coming off of like a 24-hour flight, round of flights. So severely jet lagged, but nothing to do with crypto. I guess, maybe SBF is sleeping. Sounds like he's sleeping okay. On a relative basis, I don't know if I'm sleeping better than him. He's playing games and sounds like he's sleeping. So maybe he's doing better than me. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how he's sleeping so well after stealing $10 billion, but like maybe that's what he needed. I don't know. So I don't know where we want to start, guys. The old VC series was a pretty in-depth convo on, how VCs position, how they DD, how they do portco work, sizing, the whole process. I think this one will probably be a bit more conversational on the post-FTX world, what we're looking for, what we're investing in, how we're viewing the world. I think maybe we should just start at macro landscape because that'll drive a lot of decision-making. So, obviously we have the Fed kind of slowing. We have crypto like falling off a cliff because of FTX and, all the contagion risk and everything going on. I mean, maybe Santiago will start with you, then we'll go to Dan. But, how are you guys feeling at the macro level and how are you positioning from that point of view?
Well, full disclosure, I'm not a macro guy, even though I try to understand what's going on in the world. I think the setup was really nice pre-FTX blow up, actually. Started to feel like, we were in a relatively decent position to, I don't want to say bottom, it's hard to time it, but it felt like there was a bit of a turnaround. the things that I've been looking and paying attention to, it's just been the geopolitical situation in Ukraine. And obviously today feels like every time we like make some progress, we have a setback, like, CPI number is good. And then, market responds favorably to that. And then there's like two missiles that cross into Poland from Russia and killed two people. And then it's been a tough year, right? Anytime you have any sort of positive news, the market, something bad happens. And then the market, I think, you're in a state of kind of negativity and bear market. It feels like the market wants to go there, and go into like a recession. The market doesn't go into a recession, but I think negative news tends to be overblown. And I think that's very indicative of sentiment. I don't know if that gives you a good enough answer, but I do think that, my best case kind of internal model is that you're not getting paid enough to take on huge amounts of risks, not just in crypto, but just generally. And that you're better when you can earn like 5-6% holding cash. And that's not in DeFi, this is in TradFi. And then, if you have a longer than 1 year time horizon, I just manage my own capital, but even if you're managing capital, if you have a longer than 1 year time horizon, you start kind of seeing good entry points in things that you like. But generally, I don't know, like given this whole FTX stuff, I do think that it sets us back a bit. And so I'm cautious and on the sidelines trying to really understand the full extent of the contagion. I'll stop there.
Yeah. So, like, I think if you asked me this question 2 weeks ago, it was, like, a much different thing, right? Like, that seemed to be almost, like, entirely dominated by, like, macro-related stuff, which I don't pretend to have any edge in. Don't think really anybody who's talking, like, in our landscape has any edge in it. But, like, we were just moving lock and step with, like, the queues, right? Like, we were just, like, tracking sort of, like, equity indexes and, like, trading that. And to be fair, like, it actually sucked. Like, I was, like, kind of, like, not fed up with it, but I was like, this is just like, we're just going to be like another risk asset. Like, it is what it is. And like, there's regimes of this and it sort of like goes away. But like, none of that matters now, right? Like, so like, as of a week ago, the only thing that matters now is like solvency of pretty much every counterparty that you like can think of under the sun, and like figuring out like where all those like embedded risks are. So like, yes, like the macro stuff still matters. And like, obviously it matters in extremes. But like, we're just like being driven now much more by our own fate, and unfortunately not in the right direction. I do though think that, to mirror sort of what you were saying before, is like, if it, like that CPI print, I mean, like, look, like what was the NASDAQ was up like, what, 7% that day? Like, we just like didn't notice it because everything was just melting in our world. I mean, like, some of you probably do because you have like real jobs, but like that's like a really big, that's like a top 20, I believe, like move in the equity indexes. And like, that was off like a very dovish CPI print. Like, we would be materially higher as an asset class, like if FTX had just sort of steady state and like obviously not been doing what they were doing. But like, even if like it hadn't been like uncovered, like everything would have been like much, much higher. So like, that sucks. But like, that's like, so like, if stuff does like calm down and like everybody like figures out the credit sort of risks that are in the system and like exposures to everybody, like we'll probably just go back to tracking like the macro stuff, just because there's not like enough like dedicated capital right now that has like a risk appetite for crypto that it can like move independently. And it's probably less on the backside of this.
I like your point, Dan, about how if we figure this all out, we're kind of back to tracking macro, but I'm actually kind of, I want to dig into this a little bit. So right now we have a lot of crypto risk, right? Sentiment, counterparties, contagion from FTX, et cetera. People are kind of up in the air. They don't really know what's going on. I guess what would make you guys comfortable enough to go long a significant amount of ETH here on a percentage basis versus like just relying on the macro stuff? Because I mean, even if we do get out of this rut, we have regulations, we have people just completely washed out, you know, funds don't have any capital, market makers are kind of crushed here or just non-existent. Solana has a lot of fundamental, you know, hurdles to overcome with a lot of DeFi projects just going under. You know, projects don't have their treasury balances because they're locked in FTX. Like, I think there's a lot that we have to work through on the crypto side before we get back to tracking macro. I really don't view it as a 1 or 2 month process, but what do you guys think?
I think it'll be quicker than you think. I think like the biggest like issue right now is like really just like, besides maybe like Binance, Coinbase, a couple of the larger like FIs that also play in crypto, like everybody is just pretty much not extending credit to anyone, like for good reason. And like, we were really seeing true stress tests of like all the balances and what are the purported like actually like amount of like coins held versus like customer liabilities and all that for all the exchanges. So like, that's not done. I don't think like anybody feels great about all the existing venues, like for varying degrees. I'm not going to speculate on any in particular, because like, I don't think that's useful right now. And I don't have any information that would like be sort of like useful beyond conversations that are already happening. But anyway, the point is like, I just don't think we're in a, like nobody, you're not on the backside of like thinking that everybody is solvent. And until we are, like, we're not going to sort of like move back to any normalcy with like other risk assets. Like, we're going to be in our like own like little world with like shocks. That being said, though, like, and I said this when 3 hours stuff was going through, and like obviously not realizing that this bogey was in the wind, but like, the reality is like also that there's a lot of like distressed players that like have run out of things to sell. Like, that does like happen, right? Like, you can't, just because somebody has a giant hole doesn't mean that they're like a seller of risk assets. Like, it have knock-on effects that like cause other people to have to sell them. But usually, like, those intermediaries, once they're at that point, like, they're already dead. They've already like done the action in the market.
Santiago, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's impossible to predict crypto markets. Look, I mean, FTX is still trading at like a $600 million, like FTT is still trading at a $600 million fully diluted valuation, which tells you everything about this market. And so, like, I don't pretend to understand how rational or irrational the crypto market's going to be. I like, from a fundamental perspective, I do think a lot of people are quite tired, disillusioned, have lost a lot of money, which is, you know, I think is part of a broader transition where, you know, the bar is just much higher for the incremental, to acquire the incremental user. And I think it's, the next cycle would just be at a point where you deliver on the promise of useful applications. And look, I mean, I think this, like, there's been a lot of really positive developments happening. You know, Ethereum transition to proof of stake, you have L2s that can credibly kind of, you see a path towards like supporting, you know, just some, from a scalability standpoint. And, you know, there's a lot of projects that are continue to be well capitalized. Really smart people continue to build in the space and haven't been affected by this FTX situation, like from a, you know, ability to continue to hire people and build. And I'm not like, I think it's moments like these where people just paint really broad stroke and say like crypto's dead. You know, it's all recursive leverage, you know, casino bullshit. And I don't think that's true. Like, look, I mean, the recursive leverage theme is long gone. Like DeFi has been in bear market for 2 years, really. And so like, you know, yields now in TradFi are higher than DeFi. So, you know, really that whole element is long gone. And I think this play and earn movement is real from a digital ownership collecting standpoint. Now you're just kind of waiting for like one or two or three games really that are coming to fruition probably later this, you know, in the next like 6-12 months. I mean, no surprise, I'm really bullish on gaming. I think it's going to be one of those things that, you know, really onboard a lot of users, and don't really selling them on anything other than like it's a fun game to play. You know, and then you start appreciating some of the other elements. It's kind of like the email moment. I think we're going to hit at some point. Maybe it delays us, this whole FTX situation, Luna, from a sentiment standpoint. But look, great products are hard to ignore. And if you, and I'm just from my vantage point where I get to invest in what I think are some of those, you know, really talented teams, it's going to happen in the next 2 years. I think we can't spend too much time thinking about macro, or, you know, you could have looked at the internet. You could have looked at software as a service coming out of like the dot-com crash where everyone was giving up on the internet. No one, you know what I mean? Like, people are super critical. You were in a recession at the time, or just, you know, like unfavorable economic situation. I'm not saying like, you know, obviously times could get really tough. You know, interest rates are higher now, and, you know, QE's over and all that stuff. Easy money decade is long gone. But, you know, I do believe like really good products are hard to ignore, and it's secular to some extent. And like, you know, are people going to stop wanting to play games and collect and do like core things and like from an entertainment standpoint? No. And I think truly believe that crypto is going to be too hard to ignore if teams really actually do ship. Because to be critical, you know, I think it's been the only area of criticism that I do sometimes really have a hard time. Like, I do feel that it's our weakest kind of argument here, because a lot of people from the outside in say, guys, like, what's being built that has like meaningful traction and utility? And you're like, I get it, like Bitcoin, non-sovereign store of value. Well, it wasn't hedging its inflation. It's going to take longer, but people like to come to conclusions. And so it's going to be easier if we point to people and say, look at this game. It's feature parity with, you know, a Call of Duty, and then it has all the added benefits of, you know, digital ownership, and emphasis on like added benefits. It's not that like people are coming here to earn. No. It's a feature parity, and then it's like enhancing with all the other elements of crypto. But people don't necessarily come and start playing a game because it's crypto. They simply just love the game, if you know what I mean.
No, I think that's a fair take. Like, we need a real use case to drive people in. I mean, one, for the usage, but also to showcase what we can actually do outside of, you know, scam tokens that I think are getting a lot of PR right now, right? Even though that doesn't represent the whole case, the whole space. But even in your world, Santiago, I mean, the full-fledged games that you're talking about, you know, that we both invest in, I mean, these are still years away, though. I mean, like a full-fledged AAA game takes, you know, years, right? I know we're getting close with some, but mm-hmm. we still have quite some time.
Yeah, definitely. Like I would say, like, within a year or two. And to be fair, Tom, I don't think you necessarily have to reach that end state. But if people start seeing a glimpse of, like, look, the beta is really promising, then, you know, you start acquiring user, just start getting traction. I mean, this is like a more rational take. The other rational take is like, people just love to, like, you know, invest and speculate. And, you know, if we're all back on risk on mode, then let's not forget there are just places where people, you know, can't necessarily invest outside their local economies, and crypto is kind of a conduit to, like, you know, going on DYDX and, like, taking a view on the markets, expressing that view through DYDX. Otherwise, it's impossible to do in your local jurisdiction. Like, I mean, that use case for DeFi is pretty compelling, I think, for many people that don't have a lot of access to financial products. And, like, sometimes it's easy to just say, this is just a casino and, like, it's a bunch of shit coins. But it's like, yes, obviously, like, there are thousands and thousands of tokens that couldn't exist, have no compelling value proposition or reason of existence. But, you know, there's a whole pocket of DeFi that has sort of been ignored because it's probably not very sexy, but it just works really well. And if you just go back to that use case of something like simple as Aave or Compound or DYDX or whatever, other applications that are kind of use cases that, like, perps on chain, like, that were not possible in a L1 environment like Ethereum, but are possible maybe in an environment like Solana or an L2 environment like Arbitrum or Optimism. Like, that is a very compelling use case. One of the things that I've been observing as of late, you know, just traditional, like, media outlets, like on Bloomberg, it's been fairly interesting. And even news pieces, like, from places like JP Morgan that seem to, like, kind of understand that, you know, what happened with FTX was no different than, like, a Bernie Madoff situation. And it kind of underscores the importance of DeFi and transparent financial systems. And I think, like, in the early days of the whole FTX situation really escalating, I would have thought, wow, industry is going to be regulated out of existence. But I am actually optimistic now that that may not be the case, because I think people now perhaps understand, and I think the majority of people will understand that, like, this in fact just makes it even more important to regulate traditional institutions that operate in crypto but are not DeFi. And then DeFi, you know, maybe there are some regulations that need to apply to DeFi, but it's a very different kind of set of, you know, regulations that may apply or may not apply. So I'm fairly optimistic on the regulatory side, actually. Maybe FTX is really just accelerates what we've all been waiting for the last 10 years. Just give us some clarity, but we haven't had clarity. And maybe we haven't had clarity because people want to exploit.
Santiago, I'm totally with you. Like, I think that, I mean, one of my bull cases for crypto prior to FTX was just that, regulatory clarity, like, not the DCCPA championed by Sam, because that would have put DeFi out of business, right? Requiring all front ends to register, yada, yada. But I think that there are a lot of politicians out there. And I mean, even JP Morgan, like, tweeting out in their report that, I don't know if they tweeted it, but it was tweeted that, like, they even called out the difference between centralized actors and decentralized actors, and how FTX was just a centralized blow up. But I mean, that does bring us to the DeFi question, right? And I mean, Dan, you're a pretty big power user across, you know, exchanges historically and DeFi. Would love to kind of get your take on, I don't know, I guess just DeFi in a post FTX world. Like, can you use DYDX to service your needs? Can you use GMX? Like, when do you think we'll get there? When do you think you could do business as usual without using a centralized exchange? I may have muted you, Dan, before doing background noise. You might have to unmute.
Oh, I have to. All right, cool. I was going to say, we're about to find out a lot quicker than I thought we were. So, like, in the vacuum of, like, FTX being gone, there is a real problem. So, like, my way background in all this is like, it was much more possible as like a US person with an entity to like onboard onto FTX than it is to onboard onto Binance. Like that was just kind of like, they were much more understanding and like accommodating of like an offshore corporate structure with a US UBO than sort of any of the other exchanges were. I think this led to a lot of firms like ending up being on FTX, but not necessarily on other derivatives venues. Obviously there's like CME and stuff, but like if you want to like really be out on the longer tail, so those people are going to look for another platform, and it might be likely that a lot of them only just like can end up in DeFi for like a while. So I'll say this, like if there's going to be a moment where like these sort of platforms are going to like really sort of become real liquidity venues, because like most of the deriv stuff that we do a lot of trading of the DeFi derivs against the centralized venues. And really what it is like the real liquidity is on the centralized venue. And then like, you're just like arbing that to keep like the DeFi ones in line. But, and like the DeFi ones can get out of line like quickly and like more. So there's like edge there, but ignoring that is like, I think there are like real world where some like real liquidity does move towards the DeFi stuff. There's two models, right? There's like the VAM sort of model and then the sort of like CLOB model on it. I think like both will probably be popular, though. I think like the CLOB model probably gets like bigger. I just think that's like the way like the market will shake up. But either way, like I do think there'll be a real migration of people trying to like use those as like real liquidity points going forward, especially like smaller retail accounts that like do just like want to trade this stuff, but like don't have a good like venue that they can like sort of regulatory like onboard onto easily. So I don't know. I'm a little bullish on like sort of that segment like taking off. As for the rest of the pieces of DeFi,
hey Dan, I might have muted by accident. Sorry about that. I don't know how.
Can you hear me now? Where did I drop off?
Yes. Sorry about that. Right where you said the rest of DeFi.
Oh, okay. So the rest of DeFi, it's still hard, I think, for that to be like gaining like huge market share. Like the centralized venues are obviously like pretty much like gone in terms of like the lending market in particular. Like we'll see who's going to be like really left on the end of this. I mean, like BlockFi is supposed to file today. Like Genesis is like still out there operating, but like unsure like what that future looks like. And they're all really shrunk. Like I had a random tweet about this about, cause I accidentally had said that we like had all of our funds on FTX and some typo.
You scared the hell out of me on that.
It was an accident and it was going quickly. But like the other thing I was trying to make, the larger point, was like all of our credit was effectively like yanked out of the market in the wake of 3AC. So like these lending books have actually been shrunk tremendously over the past 3 months anyway. Like they're kind of like already like were dead. This is just like the final coffin, like the nail in them. So anyway, the backside of that, what I'm trying to say with like DeFi related stuff is like there's a moment there for it, but like I'm still like skeptical that the fully collateralized model is gonna like get us there. And there's things that are working outside that, but we gotta see how they play out on the backside of it. So, and I don't want to name like specifics or like sort of get into like individual tokens and projects, but like the uncollateralized models, like this is going to be a good stress test for them, like in the DeFi side, but maybe they have like a way to get off this. I don't know. There's a window here where like DeFi has got a good shot at like really sort of proving its worth though. That's like my big thing.
So is the limiting factor to you then the collateralized model in DeFi limiting the growth or like what is the limiting factor for you right now?
Of like why we use DeFi?
I guess why we don't
because it's all like really capital inefficient historically, right? Like this historically, like we could borrow like non fully collateralized, right? Like we were posting some percentage to like, we're posting 100 RAs to borrow like 300 or something like that. Right. And like that, there's just a world that like DeFi is like competitive for us there. And I get that people are trying to build these pool products where there's some like credit worthiness of you and they can like borrow more. But like, if I'm just like taking asset X and borrowing the equivalent of it in like Y, like, I don't know, like the centralized books were just better. And like, I get, like, if you're someone who's lending, I understand why you like DeFi more. But if you're someone who's borrowing, which is like where we tend to find ourselves, like it's not really as interesting. It might be all we have going forward. And like, that might just be like why we end up sort of having to go to them. But like the centralized venues that could like assess credit quality of the borrower, like we're just like much more useful to us. I mean, like that like was like the model. Obviously that got pear-shaped and like way wrong the other way. And like things got like too aggressive where like far too much leverage was extended for like almost no or like really bad collateral. But that doesn't mean that like it's gonna be like the, like that model's dead. I mean, this is the model that exists in the real world. So I don't know.
But what are you using now though? Like what, like it feels like people only want to touch like Coinbase. People only want to hold USDC. It seems like there's like a pretty, you know, maybe a little too sensational of a movement to be conservative and safe, right? Like, you know, put your dollars on your normal bank account.
Like what am I using exchange wise or like, what am I using for like credit?
That's a good question. I mean, let's go down both. Like, what would your options be in a post FTX world on the centralized side?
Right now, we're working in a world where it's like Coinbase and Kraken, and then any of the DeFi venues, and like sure, like throw in like Gemini, and like potentially OKX and Huobi. But like again, like those are harder to onboard because like they're a little bit dependent on whether or not they'll take US UBOs.
So how do you like? Do you think that a player will swoop in to offer what FTX did with obviously much greater transparency and auditability, maybe proof of reserves, even though that's not a silver bullet? Or do you think that that flow will get built out in DeFi? I'm just trying to figure out like where people go to and what gets built out to take its place.
I don't know. This is a really tough question. I would wager that like one of the other venues that offers like deep access to derivatives starts being a little looser, letting US people on in some capacity. Yeah. That would fill the void. Because there's like a really big market opportunity there. And like it's really just how much like regulatory risk you're willing to eat. Like, look, maybe there'll be like some lurking exchange that comes out and like does like the whole thing, but like that takes time.
Santiago, what do you think? Do you think DeFi takes this flow and builds out like better methods, or do you think a centralized player will pop up, take the flow?
I tend to agree with Dan that, you know, DeFi has a lot of really good, like really interesting properties, but capital efficiency is a limiting factor. And I don't see a way to do it that is equally competitive as a centralized institution is able to. Like building reputation on chain and pools of capital and trusted pools of liquidity, like possibly it's going to take a while. There's a few projects that are trying to do this, but I think it's, for better or for worse, it's going to go to a centralized player. And candidly, that is where the regulation, regulators should pay attention to, right? But I mean, that doesn't, to say that like DeFi is not very capital efficient and because of that, it's never going to really hit scale, I think misses the point. Certainly the use case that Dan is describing is one, but there are many other use cases and reasons why you'd want to use DeFi. Leverage is certainly important in the financial system, and I get it, but in the early days, the first use case that emerged for DeFi was just a simple money market, being able to borrow against being able to lend, earn yield on your assets that you may not want to sell for tax reasons from the bear market. You had ETH and you could, mint DAI to cover, working capital or just, not incur a taxable event. That is a fairly good use case. And so I just go back to simple fundamental kind of value propositions of DeFi. Because a lot of times I think we like to say, okay, there's this traditional financial system. We need to replicate that and then compare pound for pound. And obviously by that measure of DeFi, you look at the rubric and DeFi is good in some areas, but deficient in others. Will it ever get to feature parity across all dimensions? No. But, you also have like new primitives that are impossible in traditional finance, like flash loans, that are pretty novel. And so I just think that, sometimes we're very caught up in comparing it, two systems that shouldn't necessarily be the same. We shouldn't necessarily be building the exact same things that exist in traditional finance. Perhaps a good example of that is there are a lot of people that were and are dismissive of the AMM model. And I get it, there's like impermanent loss and what have you. And a lot of people passed on a project like Uniswap. I think the idea of consumer preference is very powerful in crypto. The idea that you might have two assets that you're indifferent and you might want to supply and like cost average your way down. or just earn yield and be a market maker is for anyone, right? Even retail is pretty powerful. And so I think sometimes it requires a little bit of kind of out of the box thinking to see what other use cases are going to emerge for DeFi. But, you know, I get the point that Dan's making, you know, on the capital efficiency side. So,
yeah, I think they're fair points. I think the other thing I'm trying to figure out too is what is DeFi and I guess just what does the space look like in the next 6 months? And I'm a little concerned that we'll get like an onslaught of regulation, right? Like Sam was a well-known figure in DC, like he championed a bill that was pretty bad. It's pretty much dead now, but like we have that, we have people, I think in their concern and hysteria, maybe sacrificing some of the tenets of decentralization that we all liked, right? Like as much as I love Circle, like USDC is centralized, like as much as I love Coinbase, you know, centralized, like, do you guys feel that we're starting to err on the side of, you know, giving up the core values that that brought us all here? And I guess less so from a philosophical perspective, but also like the investment side, like if we like shoot developers in the foot, like they're not going to produce the tokens and the use cases that got us excited in the first place, right?
Well, I actually think that like SBF out of the picture is very positive for the space. He was a very toxic force. I mean, he was lobbying for not DeFi.
He was critical of it. Full on lobbying for FTX. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, because DeFi is to some extent a threat to his core business, and so I don't think at this point like there could be like some rash like knee jerk reaction but regulation, and my understanding is policy takes time to draft. I do think that, like, I'm not a political expert, but like I think that politicians understand that this is an important topic for their constituent base, and it's and growing. And so I think we will probably not see something as a knee-jerk reaction. If anything, like I feel like the timeline to get to regulatory clarity is expedited because everyone is now talking about it. You know, I've been having Bloomberg on for the last 24 hours, and you know, not an hour goes by that like it doesn't like crypto doesn't like they don't talk about it for like 20 minutes. And so, you know, I think that is positive for this industry because just so much capital has been on the sidelines. Like I think at this point, you talk to a lot of banks, you talk to a lot of folks, and there's just so many people on the sidelines because they say, look, I get it, like I'm not dismissive, like I think like having everything, a lot of stuff on chain and, you know, settling stuff on chain and, you know, is positive, but just come to me when there's regulatory clarity. Two things need to happen for DeFi really to, I think, fulfill its promise. One, I think we need to have better insurance solutions. There's, you know, the biggest risk continues to be hacks, and unfortunately, like we're in a state of chaotic innovation where there's not enough standards and Lindy effect. That will probably take years. And so, you know, a lot of the hacks have been bridges. And so I think like we need better insurance solutions. I think that's going to be probably one of the most important like themes to invest behind.
I do have one question about the insurance thing. It's like, who do we think is going to write that though?
Off-chain.
No, but somebody's somebody's got to hold the risk, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So I was like, because I feel like this comes up a lot, where like people are like, DeFi needs insurance, yada. And I get that, and I do actually think that's true. I'm just like curious who, like, you kind of can't underwrite DeFi, like the amount of like, if you look at it, it's like the premium would be so high, right? Like, yeah, I mean, what's the half life of an average like DeFi project and getting like a hit? Like on average, like I'm just saying it's very, very high. Like I think that like number might be prohibitive, such that it's like we're not at a point yet where the system is stable enough that you could even like underwrite it. Like maybe certain things, like Uniswap has like probably enough of a history and enough of a balance that like you could do it, and like maybe some of the bigger like lending ones. But I'm still like curious, like who is going to take the other side of all that insurance?
Yeah, I think you need to be. Correlation is the problem of stuff like Nexus and on-chain stuff. So, I mean, if you have like a PNC insurer, right, and you start underwriting crypto risk and it becomes 1, 2, 3, 5% of your book, but you're able to earn high premiums, then I think you do it that way. And then you, you know, the actuaries of this industry are white hat hackers, someone like Sam, right, that understand smart contract behavior and can kind of fairly, you know, have a good sense of risk. But it, you know,
no, I look, it is, I mean, that to be adversarial, I just like, this is like always
perhaps a more practical question is, who's going to buy it, right? Because technically Nexus like offers insurance for Uniswap and Compound, one of the more battle tested protocols. No one's buying it. Yields, the other issue, of course, is to your point around premiums, yields are not very high. Like, you know, you're farming, you're earning 20%, you're willing to pay 5%, 6%, 10%, right? You're still clipping 10, that's above hurdle. Now, traditional TradFi rates high, DeFi yields low, it's kind of difficult, right? From a, like, it's not very, economically, it doesn't make sense.
No, that makes sense. So, like, one thing I do want to, because this was the original sort of origin of the question on the regulatory side, is like, I think like every time there's like a big implosion and everybody's like, oh, like regulators are just going to like kill this. Like the finding, at least throughout history, has been like, that kind of doesn't happen on the way down. Meaning like when people like lose money and like the market, like aggregate falls, like there's actually almost like less reaction from like regulatory bodies, because they kind of were like, well, like the problem is like somewhat like shrunk. And like, I'll, like the big examples are like when Gox fell down, this was like the exact same thought, right? It was like, it's over. Like everybody's going to regulate this to hell. We'll never be able to like operate. And really what ended up happening is like people kind of just like forgot about it, and the space like shrunk a little bit. And it was like sort of, if anything, like went under the radar more. Luna is like another good example of this, right? Like Luna blew up, like caused a ton of damage. And like, we really haven't, like everybody's like, oh, Congress is going to do stuff. And like, there was some comments made by it, but it was kind of like done almost a month after. And like, it's come up a little bit in stablecoin builds about algorithmic stablecoins, might not be a thing, but like in general, sort of like hasn't been addressed. So like, I guess like the one thing I want to caution against is, and this might just be different, like this might be such a big fraud, they'll be like most likely like in the news going forward, and like people will be like testifying and whatnot. Like this may just be a little bit different. But my general thought is like when things like work where like investors lose money, and like crypto shrinks and like people walk away from it, like it becomes less of like an interesting thing for like regulators to like care about. So I think there's like a little knock-on effect there where like that might actually help, and it might not be as bad as sort of people are putting it out there. Or it could be completely wrong and they turn around like next week and they like cripple the whole industry with like regulation. Yeah. But it doesn't seem like anybody's like really calling for anything yet.
I think the, Tom, to your point of what does DeFi look like in 6 months, 6 months might be too kind of a short timeline to predict anything meaningful. But I think, if you asked me this question a year ago, my response would have been the same as today, which is, I think in the next, you know, DeFi increasingly will be KYC pools of liquidity, trusted pools of liquidity, where you know your counterparty. And I mean, when you think about it, and the message to regulators should be consistent, which is, if you regulate the on-ramps very well, then you don't necessarily need to regulate at the smart contract level, because everything is transparent. It's been filtered and vetted through the on-ramp. So focus on that. Clearly, they didn't, right? Because of the lack of clarity, you had regulated, you know, institutions like Coinbase, Kraken, and then, but because of the sort of the gray area, you allowed for, you push for stuff to go offshore, like an FTX. And, you know, look at what, not only in the US, but look what happened in Singapore, where unfortunately a lot of people were hit because they were using FTX. Why? Because Binance stopped operating there. But like, FTX was like hovering above all this in a gray area. And, you know, wasn't very, you know, you should have regulated that. You should be regulating that the same way that you're regulating traditional financial institutions. Like, and the simple criteria is, anyone that is custodying assets should be regulated no different than a normal financial institutions. Proof of reserves, solvency cap, like Basel rules, all that jazz applies, right? You have certain governance and compliance and risk management, everything, right?
So, Santiago, just to play devil's advocate against you guys here for a minute, and trust me, I'm a DeFi bull and I love open finance. But I mean, it doesn't seem like it's the regulation that's pushing us towards centralization, right? It seems like it's just people in crypto that are scared, right? Like, and some of that does stem from a lack of clear regulation, right? Like Ethereum with OFAC blocks, right? Over 50%. Like people storing all their assets on Coinbase, like people storing all their stables on USDC, like people getting worried about Silvergate. Like it seems like the space itself are the ones moving toward centralization, maybe due to a lack of regulation, but it's not because of any current regulation. It just seems like people are going there now out of a sense of security. And I think that people are starting to maybe go against the decentralization aspects that brought us here, right? Like we're kind of there, right? Like everyone I know is moving their money to Coinbase. Like, you know, it's kind of like, why do we have to do that really? To begin with? I mean, a lot. Yeah.
I mean, Ledger had their record sales day in its entirety, like this Sunday or something.
But
I think
a lot of people are moving
assets off chain.
But like in a bad scenario, like you're storing, if you want to be risk off, you're storing USDC on a Ledger. So you're not really protected unless you're storing ETH on that ledger.
Well, I think there's two things, right? Like there's people, like both are true. Like people can be moving assets to Coinbase and moving assets to ledgers. It's like, basically like you have like, if you had tiering of like credit, right? Like the top is like sort of Coinbase, like Binance, like everybody's moving either there from like the tier two and down sort of venues, or they're moving it locally and they're moving it to hardware. So like really what you're just seeing is like a huge flight and exodus of any counterparty exchange, custodian, yada, yada, that like is a like even like a sniff of like credit quality concerns. So like that's like why both are like true.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely true. Both could be true.
But Tom, I mean, I want to just push back on something you said now, which is if you're moving, the distinction between like moving USDC and ETH, like I understand that, you know, USDC is not seizure resistant and, you know, decentralized, if you will. It could be frozen by this consortium that created it. But is that really like a bad thing? Like, I mean, I think for a while we've said yes, because, you know, there might be a state actor that doesn't really like DeFi and wants to shut it down. And it's a very credible threat, right? If you want to shut down DeFi tomorrow, just, you know, take down USDC. Right. But it hasn't happened, right? I mean, you always got to think, like, what is the motivation for a regulator to do that? I think, like, the Tornado Cash situation was just that endpoint that was being used to, like, obfuscate funds that had been hacked by, like, this entity, Lazarus Group, that is, you know, a state-sponsored hacker group in North Korea. Like, that is a very imminent threat. Right, you're essentially giving North Korea their like annual budget for like, you know, nuclear warheads, because it's been over $1 billion, right, that have been like hacked and funneled through Tornado Cash, right? But like I think like for a while this industry has been not very practical. Like I understand the values and principles of decentralization and I like them a lot, and transparency, but on the other side you have to wonder like, what are we building towards? And I think if you really want to see the financial system increasingly operate in DeFi rails, meaning open, transparent, like that anyone can audit 24/7, proof of reserves, like that's the real powerful stuff, because that prevents a Bernie Madoff, that prevents a Sam doing whatever the fuck he did. You know what I mean? Like that is the true stuff, right? You're not going to fix everything, but I actually like don't find, I think like maybe I'm too naive. Maybe in a year or so, where like maybe the scenario happens, like you'll come back at me and say, "See, I told you we should have built like DAI, single collateral DAI, and like moved to like a truly decentralized stablecoin, like seizure resistant." But like, let me like hypothetically think about a scenario where USDC continues to gain share. You have trusted pools of liquidity, where JP Morgan's interacting on chain with, you know, I don't know, another counterparty, and you're issuing your mortgage on chain and you're able to fractionalize that, or you're able to sell that in a much, you know, you're able to get a loan much faster you know, maybe have zero knowledge proofs, like to like, you know, get a credit extended much faster by a centralized institution, but everything is being settled on chain. Is that like, I know it's not like a perfect end state, but like it is a meaningfully marginal improvement to the current financial system because it has much broader inclusion, transparency, competitiveness, consumer preference. Like, I just sometimes think that like we're caught in these like hypothetical discussions where we want to build a perfect system, but like it never is like that. You know what I mean? Like no, is USDC really that bad?
No, I think you bring up a good point. I mean, honestly, I think you're probably right, right? Like I don't really see somebody taking USDC's crown, and I do think it'll continue to grow in value. And frankly, I don't really have anything wrong with that, right? Like I'm doing everything right. Like I don't really assume anybody's going to blacklist it. But I mean, there are edge cases, right? Like when FTX went down, my first thought was, do I want to hold USDC and, you know, if something happens to Silvergate or a bank, take a haircut and have a claim against Circle? Or do I want to hold US dollars on Coinbase and have a claim against a public company? Like my first thought was, I'd rather hold US dollars on Coinbase, right? Like, I guess, did you have a similar thought or were you kind of just...
Yes, absolutely. Why? Because I think, again, the whole reason why you're thinking that is because you weren't regulating FTX, but in a version where you really focus on that. And I think we're saying the exact same thing, which is focus on regulating the on-ramps and the custodians. And I think if you do a good job doing that, we should be avoiding these situations that very quickly like degrade trust in that, right? In your counterparty.
I mean, it's one of those things, right? Like end of the day, like USDC and USDT are dollars in a bank account. So like they'll always be seizable. Like they have to exist somewhere.
Dan, yeah. I mean, Dan, do you think, I mean, you guys probably operate like in a lot of USDC, like, I mean, you, like, what was your decision making while all this was going down in terms of holding USDC or dollars or USDT or DAI or something else?
Anything that we had that was stables that obviously like stuff stuck in FTX excluded, like we turned to cash and actually got it not only to Silvergate, but then got it to like a larger bank after. So like we just got like we went as risk off as you possibly could with anything that like wasn't nailed down. That being said, like almost all of that is back in the system already. Like we've like reversed it and like gone back into stables or like deployed it and bought things. But like at the point it was like you just got to get out.
Yeah.
Is Santiago what
I did the same.
Yeah, no, I did the same too. It's all the same page. But Santiago, I want to keep going down this thread. Like what is the risk though that I just don't totally understand how USDC operates in DeFi in that world. Like if I'm playing around with the DeFi project, I take, let's say I just withdraw, I deposit into Uniswap and AMM, like, you know, I deposit both assets, 3 weeks goes by, I withdraw USDC and that USDC gets blacklisted. Like how exactly does Circle decide, you know, hey, Tom, your USDC is from a pool that somebody, some drug dealer put $1 million of capital in, so we're going to seize you, or do they seize the pool? Like, I feel like it just gets really blurry on where the policing happens.
Yeah, that's a great question and one I don't have a clear answer on, because we've seen now people that received ETH or funds that were in Tornado have to now make a claim, right, to the department. I believe it's the Department of Justice to get it back. And yeah, that it's tough, right? I think, you know, again, the question you ask is like, do you think that we can develop tools from a monitoring standpoint that allows us to like very quickly make a determination of it's you, Tom, it's you that's signing and you've been KYC'd and you're law abiding, you know, whatever. And those funds are released fairly quickly.
Yeah, I mean, like, after the money leaves a wallet, like, let's say I'm, you know, cartel operator from, you know, the show Narcos, whatever you want. Let's say somehow I get $1 million of USDC in my main MetaMask wallet. Once I send that money out, and let's say I get ETH back, I mean, there's no recourse for Circle, the government, whatever, unless they're able to, like, physically go get the asset that was exchanged for and then give that back to the Uniswap pool from where the USDC was blacklisted. Like, it just seems like it's going to be really hard. Obviously, we don't need perfect answers, and, like, it'll be a spectrum, but if USDC does grow to be 10 or 100 times the size, it seems like policing the blacklisting is going to get really, like, really fuzzy.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
It's very tough. I hate to say this, but it's true, right? If you're a regulator, would you rather have everything going on or a large part of the economy being in the dark and be a cash? Like places like India, right? The informal economy is massive. Or would you rather have, I mean, there's obviously a push towards digitization for obvious reasons, like tax collecting and all whatnot. But I mean, I think like anyone that's operating crypto should probably like understand that like if you're trying to do something bad, you're going to get caught. Like it is very hard to keep really good OPSEC to the point where unless you're like a Lazarus group that has a state behind you that is willing to give you some sort of immunity, most of the time you're going to get caught. Because anytime you want to send funds back, again, regulate the off-ramp and the on-ramp. If you do a good enough job and there's, you know, coordination around that, then, you know, good luck trying to, like, you know, do something nefarious on-chain and then try to, like, cash out. It's probably going to be it is probably extremely hard to do that. And it has been for a while. And candidly, yeah. Frankly, I think that's a good thing. For the industry.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, if you're not doing anything wrong, you really don't have an issue. But you know, if we had Eric Voorhees on, he might take the other role here, which is like, then we're leaving our like sovereignty and decision-making up to like the political appetite or the feeling of a regulator or.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we should regulate smart contracts. The base layer, the settlement layer. That should be fully decentralized. But, you know, other stuff, perhaps, yes. And certainly custodial institutions, yes.
Yeah, I'm with you on the custodial solutions. The base layer side is going to be interesting because I don't know. I don't know enough about the technicals of Flashbots, but obviously, we have a high percentage of OFAC blocks, and I don't know why they would want to take the risk of running afoul of the government. I guess that just has to be decentralized and anonymous in some capacity to get back to.
Dan, you may know this. I don't want to put you on the spot, but like, this is already a problem for Bitcoin miners, right? This idea of like selecting blocks, right? If there's like some sort of, if you can. And don't quote me on this, but I'll look back and I'll link it.
What, like about doing it. Like OFAC screening at the mining?
Yeah, level. Yeah. I mean, they do that already.
They started and then they stopped. Like people got a lot of flack for doing it. I don't like. Again, I'm not like following super closely like what the mining thing is, but I'm pretty sure that like is completely like done with as of right now. Like that is no longer happening. I think it was like one mining group that was doing it at one point. But yes, it's possible, right? Like it is, and look, it could be enforceable to like. Certain geos. It's just like I think miners in general like just tend to like operate mostly outside the US anyway. So like they probably just like don't care as much.
All right, let's get off the regular let's talk funner, maybe more optimistic stuff to like as the last part of our conversation. Like how are you guys positioning? Like are you as active on the VC side? Are you as active on the liquid side? Dan, you clearly just called a bank and screamed at them to wire all your money back to the markets. Like
they were very nice.
You know, where are you guys?
I didn't scream at anybody. It all went very smooth. Yeah, I mean, like, like we're again, like we're just like not taking exposure to like any slightly riskier sort of venue. And like that basically means like we're sticking with like the majors, which I've like said on here a couple times, and like really just playing it super safe with like who we're taking exposure from. Like, look, we haven't had Borrow for a while just because, like, it also hasn't, like, been functionally possible. So, like, we're not, like, leveraging anything. And we're just, like, sort of surviving and, like, hoping, like, things, like, turn around in some capacity one way or another. Or at least, like, the fucking pieces of the industry don't, like, keep blowing up. Like, that's, like, I mean, if you, like, look at all, like, the losses we, like, took on the year. Like, yeah, like, a lot of it is positioning. Like, yeah, like, a lot of it is, like, just, like, outright risk. But, like, the ones... like FTX are the ones that like you they're the unknown unknowns. Like we always like assume that here's the thing is like we always like size any exchange exposure with some thought that like all the money can get taken, and it's usually because we like assume that that venue could get hacked. We don't usually like assume like it's like actually just like taking the money itself, but either way it's like sort of the same risk profiling you're doing it. But those always hurt the most because it's like fuck, it's like I didn't even like it's not even like I did anything to like sort of get us in this position, but like you can only take so many hits in a year too, so like you got to just like sort of be super conservative like going forward. I don't know, at least I work about it.
I mean just to play devil's advocate, like I follow this account called the Kobiesi Letter. I'm sure you guys probably follow it too, and like they him her had like a great tweet, I think it was yesterday, and basically they said, you know, $2 trillion lost in crypto, the collapse of FTX, like 80% of stocks in bear market, like the biggest wave of tech layoffs. Like the Fed isn't stopping, they're just slowing like hikes and like the worst earnings. Like it seems like the backdrop is pretty brutal. Like obviously like we're still allocating to the best VC deals we can find because it's sort of a little bit more of an insulated market and you could like adjust your risk based on vals and things like that. But it seems like, I don't know. I just don't really understand who the marginal buyer of crypto here is. Like within the
there
next 2 to 3 months.
There hasn't been one for months. There has like look at the price. Like there like I mean maybe that'll change, but like, you know the answer to that question.
But like who steps in? Like why
I don't
not?
Know,
like
but
when do you step in?
Whoever knows. It's always like who thought DeFi Summer would kick off a huge like wave of like retail adoption? Who thought that COVID would kick in and everybody gets into this check? You don't know.
So if you don't know, why are the money in
because
be ready?
It will happen eventually. Because it will, and you want to be ready. And, like, you're going to make all the money. Well, at least, like, we tend to, like, make all the money, like, when those, like, things do happen. But you don't know. And thinking that you do know is, like, wrong.
What would get you comfortable to deploy more? Like, what would be, like, is it just that quick reaction? Like, you know, hey, a new DeFi summer, a new NFT bull. Like, is it just, like, a quick reaction to the news? Or is there something you're waiting for to give you... I know it mostly comes down to just late night reading threads, changing your view, at least, you know, for most people.
Yeah, like, I mean, like,
what is it?
I'll say this, because, like, I think I think crypto, like, a lot of times, like, has this, like, problem where, like, it's constantly trying to, like, justify its own existence, and it's like, well, it, like, does this, and it's censorship resistant, it, like, does, like, you know what, like, I think, like, the biggest, like, export of, like, crypto is that it's entertaining, and it's fun, and people love it. And like that matters and like keeps people entertained and it keeps them in it and they like love to do it and they love to be a part of it. And like, yeah, something that is like gambling and speculative related. And some of it is like people actually drawn to like the core ethos of like having custody of like their value at any given time. And like, and there's all kinds of different things that people like love like in that. But like its greatest like suck in any given point is that it's like a colossally like enjoyable sort of like industry to be in. It can be also like constantly painful, but like that's what keeps it going in my opinion on like the larger sort of like portion. So anyway, like I think like that's like what you're looking at any given point. Like, look, if everybody leaves and there's apathy, like that's what kills crypto, not like regulation. It's people not giving a shit about it. And as long as people do, like I think you're fine. And you just gotta like watch those waves.
That's fair. Santiago, what do you think?
Certainly agree with that last point, Dan. As I said earlier, it's impossible for me to predict these markets, especially on a short-term basis. But, you know, I think if you have longer than a year time horizon or two, you start seeing great entry points. You're never going to time the bottom, ever. We are certainly in very unprecedented times. There's two kind of perhaps conflicting thoughts. One, I don't think you're getting paid enough to take like a ton of risk right now. Because you can clip 5% off chain and TradFi, like just buy treasuries or whatever. Like, you don't have to be a hero.
It's sad, Santiago. I bought some treasuries and I was like, it's sad, but you're right.
No, but like, listen, I mean, the theme is just survive. Like, if you've survived Luna, Three Arrows, Voyager, BlockFi, and now FTX, you're an OG. Like, you know what I mean? The worst is that you built the thesis, you're here, you're still very early, and you just get blown out. It's these tail risks that every once in a while emerge in crypto, and you just have to survive. And I think this year, you know, everything is going on. Like, you look at the smartest guys, Paul Tudor Jones or a Drunken Miller, like these guys, they're also saying the same thing. It's like, look, I just don't know. Like, it's sort of like, sometimes, like, it's like in poker, you don't have to play every hand. If you're playing every hand, you're going to win. It's like, you're not going to win. It's the surest way to lose all your money. And so, like, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be totally out of the market. It's just calibrating your risk a little bit. To your point, Tom, I focus on early stage. I want to always have the ability to back great teams. Valuations are down a ton. I mean, a deal that would have gone down at 50 million, 30 million, 40 million, fully diluted value, like equity value last year, is now getting done at 10, maybe 7. Those are like, it takes one or two great trades like that to really, I mean, this very much parallel distribution in venture. And so space is not going to go away. To Dan's point, it is, you know, a lot of it is entertainment and the memes, and, you know, people laugh at that, but it's true. But there's also a really powerful inflection point that this industry, since DeFi really is entering, which is we are slowly but surely delivering meaningful, useful applications. And I know sometimes people are critical of that, but I'm convinced that that is going to continue to happen. And I think gaming is going to be that email moment of this industry. Before email, no one really understood what the internet was for. They were very critical as of like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But like, here we are, right? Did people imagine the smartphone back then? Absolutely not, right? And so I think like my imagination doesn't stretch that far. I just want to have the capital and the resources to be there to invest in teams, hopefully at a $10 million valuation, not at $100. And then just, you know, there's probably going to be increasing skepticism because of all of this. A lot of people are hurt. Like, I've seen numbers, I think, I don't know, correct me here if I'm wrong, but the magnitude of the loss here, with Bernie Madoff, like, people got back 81 cents on the dollar, I think. It took years, right? Like 10 years plus. People are still getting checks in the mail every month. But still, people recovered a lot of capital. Unclear how that's going to play out here in the FTX situation. There was a lot of retail money. So it's going to take a while to restore confidence. I think if there's regulatory clarity, whatever that is, it's still going to be positive. And at some point, allocators of capital are going to come back once this whole macro situation cools down and people have a better understanding of inflation and all that. Is that Q1, Q2 next year? Possibly. And then people don't want to sit in cash, right? You know, Dan didn't want to sit on cash for like a weekend. But like, you're talking about capital. You know what I mean? Like
I was,
even in
I was way, disgusted like, with myself.
Yeah, how do you live with yourself, Dan?
No, but like, you know what I mean? Like, at some point, allocators of capital have been thinking about crypto for a while, maybe haven't even allocated, right? They've taken a hit on their traditional book. Anyone that's been long tech is down a ton. But, you know, you have to come back and you have to allocate. And the question is, at that point, whether it's in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, where people are willing to take on more risk, I got to think that the proportion of people willing to put money in a crypto is going to be higher than what it has been historically. And the ratio between putting in money into Bitcoin and Ethereum and perhaps other stuff is going to be higher and more heavily weighted towards things other than Bitcoin, insofar as you have really good applications. And I think gaming is going to be one of those killer applications. So all this to say, like, I don't know, I'm willing to be patient. I don't know. I'm just trying to, I hope this year kind of ends without a major blow up, another major blow up. And then we can come back next year.
Even the hackers take off for Christmas and Thanksgiving, hopefully.
Hopefully, Poland doesn't decide to retaliate against Russia today. the world doesn't go into a nuclear, you know, war, you know, inflation gets under control, and then we have some sort of stability in Q1, probably Q2 of next year, and then, you know, people want to take on more risk. But Dan just said something really important is, I think you want to get a bit of ahead of that if you want to make meaningful returns, not just track the index.
This whole, like, missile thing's already, like, reverted, by the way, like, since we started this thing.
Well, oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
The it's already, they're already, like, walking off it. So,
thank God. Well, guys, it's great. It's always fun as hell to talk to you guys. You guys are two of the smartest, most plugged in people in the space. And I think two of my favorite takeaways are just, Dan, you on, you know, how a lot of the damage has already been done and, you know, bad assets sold, et cetera, all the shenanigans. And then two, Santiago, your point on just, you know, if you could survive Luna, FTX, Voyager, BlockFi, all the others, you're an OG, I think, and the space is still here. I think we all agree we're going to be here for a while. So I'm excited to keep investing in building, guys, and it's been great having you on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tom. It's always great chatting with you.
Take care.
Talk soon, guys. See ya.
Take care, guys.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Delphi podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on your podcast app, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter or LinkedIn. Stay tuned for our next episode, out soon.